NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, Todd.
Well, hello there, John.
Here we are together again. You know, Greg and Miles are off earning their keep someplace, and it's you and I. And this week I've chosen a little different tack to take. All right, so we're not going to analyze an accident that has been done because of the circumstances of this one. At the end of every show, I caution all of our pilots about pre-planning, doing a thorough pre-flight, and after they get in the air, to put their head on a swivel. This one really calls into question the part of on after takeoff and the pilot not the pilot flying, or actually both pilots, paying attention to traffic. Now, this is an event that occurred in a foreign country, and we'll get to that in a second. And it covers a general aviation training airplane operating out of a relatively small airport that has commercial service. So it complicates the training situation, and it complicates the commercial pilot situation. And we'll go over all of that in a minute. But it touches upon a number of areas that we need to be concerned with here in the U.S., given the high volume of training that we're having, and a lot of it is in and around airports with commercial operations. So I'll let you, Todd, give us the parameters of this particular accident.
Well, the accident in question took place near Nairobi, Kenya, on the 5th of March, 2024, and the report came out less than 3 months after the event. It's a preliminary report, which has a lot of background data, but so far, no analysis or probable cause. But the two aircraft in question, there was a Cessna 172 training aircraft with an instructor and student on board, and you had a regional aircraft taking off on a domestic flight. Now, this airport, which is at Wilson Airport near Nairobi, is not the main international airport, but it's still a very busy airport. They have training activity going on. The accident at Cessna came from a training organization that had about a dozen aircraft and a ground trainer. And the other aircraft was from a small fleet of an airline that has a lot of regional flights in the area. And looking at some of the transcripts of the air traffic controllers, there are several aircraft in the air at the same time. Now, for those of you looking at the video version of this, we have a schematic on the screen of Wilson Airport. And as you see, there are crossing runways. The Cessna was apparently doing touch and goes on runway 07, and the Dash 8 was taking off on runway 14. And the aircraft, rather the airport, is at about 5,500 feet above sea level elevation. Rather. And on the day of the accident, the weather report at the time of the accident said that the ceiling was about 2,200 feet above ground level. And again, about 5,500 feet is the elevation. 2,200 feet above ground level was the broken layer of clouds. The accident was one where first officer was the pilot not flying, The captain was a pilot flying of the Dash 8. Looking at the transcript from the air traffic control tower, there didn't seem to be any indication that they saw the aircraft shortly before impact. There was plenty of indication that they were looking outside the aircraft, looking at traffic in the area, and apparently spotted the aircraft that was doing the touch and goes. Shortly after takeoff, roughly 400 feet above ground, is when the impact happened. The horizontal stabilizer of the Dash 8 cut into the rear of the Cessna, broke off the horizontal stabilizer and tail section, and the Cessna crashed. Both people were killed. The other aircraft was able to do a go-around, land without further incident, had some minor damage to the stabilizer. But one of the reasons, as John said, that we're talking about this is that this is something that can happen around the world. Although the U.S. is one of the major places in the world where flight training takes place, it takes place all over the world. And there, like I said, there was a school on site at this airport. The same issues that are facing the U.S. are the same issues that are facing Kenya and around the world. If you're flying as a student pilot, whether with or without instructor, and you're in an airport where you have dissimilar aircraft flying, aircraft that are bigger than you are, better performing than you are, and that fly on routes different from what you're flying. In this case, the accident Cessna was doing touch and goes, typical training at an airport. The airline aircraft was doing a flight elsewhere in the country. And although there was no indication in the transcript from the control tower that they were looking out and saw this aircraft before impact, clearly they were in a position where they could have 10 miles visibility. The impact happened about 1,000 feet below the broken layer of cloud. So we're assuming visibility is not a problem. Now, John, there are other assumptions we're making based on the fact that there's a lot of data, but not a lot of conclusions as to what was happening at any given point in the process and who was doing what at any given point of the process.
You know, one of the things that I took note of, and it was towards the end of what you just said, right? So the airplane's taken off. We have a first officer who is the pilot, not flying, monitoring the instruments. So he's probably heads down on takeoff. And this airplane was struck on the right-hand side. So he may not have been looking out the window at the time. Right? And 400 feet from the time you take off, he's probably cleaning up the landing gear and taking care of the items in the cockpit, running the checklist, the pre-takeoff checklist. So he may not be looking out the window, but the captain should have been looking out the window and saw this airplane. This airplane took off before them. So in theory, it should have been higher than they at the time of them taking the takeoff roll. So it should have been in the windscreen, even though it was on a path that was divergent from runway 4 to runway 7, the Cessna should have been going away. There's no reference in the report. Did the airplane, the Otter, the Havilland airplane, continued on runway heading, or did he turn off? It's not called out in the report.
And typically, if this were an event happening in large parts of the world, U.S., Canada, Western Europe, my first go-to would be to go to one of the sites that have ADS-B data and look and see what the flight track of the aircraft involved were. There was no ADS-B data that I could find for either one of these aircraft, either historical or current. So we are relying on whatever information is coming out of the Ministry of Roads and Transport out of Kenya. And so far, at least in the preliminary report, there's no flight path data. There's no estimated altitude at any given point in time of the two aircraft. And nor is there any analysis of what could the pilots have seen out of their windscreens at every point of the flight, either the Cessna pilots or the Dash 8 pilots. Now, this is not to fault the Kenyan authorities. This is a very preliminary report. This was published less than 3 months after the event happened. And typically these reports around the world take a year plus or minus a few months to complete. So we will look forward to seeing what the results are. But keep in mind that this is not a minor event in the sense of would not have any repercussions with what's going on in that part of Africa. Because again, the demand for pilots is a global demand for pilots. And like any other airline, if pilots are with an airline, they get some time, they move on. So even if an airline, no matter where in the world, is well-staffed now, there's a constant need for more people in the pipeline. And this flight school at this airport near Nairobi is clearly one of those places that's keeping people in the flight line. And just from the description in the report, they had about a dozen aircraft. They had a ground simulator. And this was a school that could grant both private pilot and commercial pilot and instrument ratings. So all the basics that one would need to start an airline career, apparently, you can learn at this location. So that said, this accident happened. It was a tragedy. But I'm sure every day there are many other people out there doing what this crew was doing when they had the accident. So anything that they can learn from this accident will be useful. And here's the other big message that we want to take out. We talk about accidents all over the world, training accidents included. Nothing much changes. That is, you still have the same kinds of aircraft. You still have very similar rules with respect to training and procedures and how people fly in and out of airports. So if you learn something from either Kentucky or from Kenya with an accident like this, and you're flying somewhere else in the world, learn from it and take it forward.
All right. So I found something else interesting in this report, and it deals with air traffic control. So, and I'm sure we're going to talk about when the pilot calls in his damage. But at the time that the air traffic controller got the report from the pilot that something had happened, he called and notified AAF, Airport Rescue and Firefighting, activated the crash alarm. And at the same time, the tower was able to request other aircraft within the airspace, including two helicopters and fixed-wing airplanes, to proceed to the site without any coordination.
I think there may have been coordination. And here's one of the things that really jumped out at me. The accident happened at around 9:34 local time, 0633 Zulu time. And right about the time when the event took place, the transcript says, unrelated transmission from other traffic, where instead of having any sort of back and forth, they had this one-line message. I'm thinking, whether or not there was zero conversation or what seems to be not relevant conversation, that's important for understanding what happened right about the time of the event. Because let's take, for example, there's a mid-air collision. There's several aircraft in the area, and no one makes note of it. Not air traffic control, not the aircraft. That's giving you some information. Or maybe there was what seemed to be non-pertinent conversations because things were seen and maybe people were not speaking, proper phraseology. Either way, that sort of information is useful to people like ourselves trying to figure out who knew what when and what did they do once they found out about it.
You raise a point, and I'll talk about accidents that I was involved with. So we had an accident where the airplane was flying and we lost the flight data equipment. We lost all the electrical power to critical systems at the same instant. We did the timing on the flight data recorder when everything was lost. And at the very same incident, in second, we lost all these components. Now, big airplanes have multiple electrical systems. So we lose a bus and we lose all these systems. Right? The fact that we lost all of those at the same instant, it tells us a story. Most people will look at it and say, all right, we had a failure. But you can deduce a lot of information from those sounds and those events and the timing of them. And in big accidents that become very difficult to get the causes for, that kind of activity is critical. It takes a lot of work to tease out the information out of that as to the causes, because now you have to go back and look at the generators or on the engines and then where the battery bus comes in. I mean, it's a very complicated process. I don't want to go into that right now. But the point is that there's a lot of information that can be teased out of somewhat other information that you think may not be related. And you raised the point very aptly about this transmission. There might be something involved with that transmission that needs to be explored a little further. You know, sound spectrum analysis on what they heard. Was it a simple click of the mic? What happened? I would say that one of the things that they have to look at is when that little airplane got struck, that wasn't it was a fatal blow to the airplane, but it may not have been a fatal blow to the passengers. And they may have tried to communicate. And that would be an important fact if they could, in fact, ascertain that it was that airplane that sent that message. Just for our audience, just to realize that we go to great details like that when we analyze an accident and an event occurs right in the middle of it. It needs to be chased down to ground, so to speak, to find out all we can about it and see if it had a role in the accident or not.
Now, fortunately, in this case, the Dash 8 had both a flight data recorder and a cockpit voice recorder. There's no indication that it was the data was damaged or destroyed because the aircraft was largely intact. So fortunately, it's there. And I would hope that there's some details coming out of that. But certainly, in addition to what was being said to air traffic control or to other aircraft, I'd like to know what was being said in the cockpit. This happened within minutes after takeoff. They landed shortly after the event. Presumably, all the information during the flight and quite a bit of information prior to takeoff will be there. So were the pilots operating with the sterile cockpit kind of rule that's common around the world? Were the procedures being followed? Was anything out of the ordinary that could be gleaned from either of those two sources of data? Again, this is something that, you know, for our own edification and for our audience, is there anything here that's new and different that can inform how procedures might have to be changed around the world? Again, these are two common types of aircraft, twin-engine turboprop aircraft, airliner, and a small single-engine training aircraft. That combination happens around airports around the world. But fatal accidents, fatal midairs, don't happen all that often. So anytime there is an event like this, it's something that personally I like to pay attention to.
Now, it's also an interesting point in there with the voice recorder, because at this point in time, both airplanes probably were on the same frequency for the tower. And maybe that voice recorder picked up what that transmission was. And of course, the power of the transmission is represented by how loud it was on the cockpit voice recorder may indicate that it was close to the airplane. Right, so that the voice recorder is a very, very critical piece of communications gear, a recording thereof, all the communications.
Now, some secondary sources of information, which I commonly search for in an accident like this, I haven't found any. Then again, that's probably a function of me not searching in the right places. But if you have any sort of accident happening in the current era, it's very likely, especially if you have survivors on board an airline or aircraft, there will be several people who will say something on social media and share something on social media after the fact, and maybe even having recordings of the actual event. And again, for some people, they enjoy taking pictures of their takeoff or their landing, and they could have been normally just having a regular good time taking a video, and this event happens. And any information coming from that could be instructive. And also, like I mentioned earlier, ADS-B tracks are easy to get for airlines around the world. Didn't see any for this aircraft on this day. But again, something I might do on my own later on is, can I have the ability to go back in time with the systems I have access to and say, okay, replay the ADS-B tracks at this airport at this particular time before and after the event. Now, of course, if the airplane didn't have it, we won't have that track. But if there's at least one aircraft with an ADS-B track I can look at, I could use that to compare to the analysis that comes out later and say, okay, is this consistent with the official analysis of this? Or do we have something where something is missing or something is there that shouldn't be there? And I, you know, like to remind our audience, a few weeks ago, we did a show where we looked back at an analysis that was done by the NTSB. Later on, we found out that there was extra data, not from the outside world, but from the NTSB itself, that showed that instead of being a situation where one helicopter got hit by one drone in midair, there were actually two helicopters in the air at the same time. And the helicopter that was hit, that was stated by the NTSB, and they had evidence for it, was not the helicopter they fingered in the video. In other words, a helicopter that didn't get hit was seen in a video. A helicopter that did get hit only got seen at the very end of the video. And the NTSB thought, oh, there was only one helicopter. No, two different helicopters. So whatever the conclusion was in that event, the fact that you had two aircraft in the same area changes the perspective of, okay, what are the lessons learned we can take away from this?
And remember, the point of us doing all of this is education, lessons learned. I mean, it's treated as entertainment. A lot of the folks that watch this and listen to these podcasts are not pilots. They enjoy finding out what's going on in our segments of the industry. But really, we're here for our fellow pilots, mechanics, dispatchers, and everybody else that's in the stream of providing aviation services to the world to help educate them. Because none of us come to work to make a mistake. None of us. And we can profit from those mistakes inadvertently made by others, just enlightening all of us. And that's the whole purpose of why we spend so much time and effort on these shows. So we'll be back to this accident when more comes to light. That's for sure, because this may be a real gold mine in mining what not to do's, you know, in identifying where the problems are in the system. And, you know, the NTSB, you and I, all of us in the U.S. spend a lot of money every year in Africa trying to help the African aviation authorities get better at what they do. And we have some success. I keep saying we, like I'm still at the NTSB. But the NTSB has many successes and many, not failures, but places where they didn't get traction to make things better. Right? So it doesn't mean that we should stop doing what we're doing. We should continue trying to help aviation entities wherever they are and try to make it the rest of the world look like us on the accidents. And the reason why I say that is, you know, we can go back to 9/11 when we had the big event in New York City and come forward today, and we had one commuter airline accident in Buffalo, New York, the 121 accident. But in all that time, we have not had one major airline accident in the United States. And that has taken a lot of hard work from a lot of people, a lot of financial investments from the Americans, Uniteds and Southwest and all the rest, right, to make transportation for all of us safer. So let's not overlook the fact that we have really made some great strides here in the U.S. and Europe for safety, but we need to spread that to the rest of the world. And when we look at the accidents in South Asia, South America, and Africa, they all can stand some improvement. And years ago, we did make a big investment in South America for accidents, and it shows today. Are they as good as we are? Not quite, but they're damn close. Right? Africa's got a ways to go, and South Asia is a real heavy lift work in process. But we'll get there eventually with the help of all of us in aviation.
And this goes right to my second to last word. The reason I picked this one out for us to discuss was because I thought there are elements here that are applicable all over the world. Commonly used training aircraft, commonly used airliner aircraft, common situation, you know, those type of aircraft operating in the same airspace. What can we learn from this? Well, clearly it is a different country, but it's not a different situation. Anyone no matter what your level of involvement in aviation, if you're in aviation safety, if you're an operator, if you're an instructor pilot, you can look at this and pull something out of it. Are you going to get a complete story? Yeah. Not even when the final report comes out, not even when we make our follow-up comments about this, is the complete story written, because if you're out there, for instance, flying in that environment at that particular airport, this is a lesson that you can take from this event, apply it going forward. What is it that you're doing as an organization, or the airport is doing, or the civil aviation authority is doing to keep this sort of thing from happening? If someone points out that, hey, there's a lack of something here, whether it's resources or procedures or whatnot, what's the response going to be by those who are responsible to make those changes? And in the United States, it's been a generational effort to change aviation, not just on the airliner end, but on all phases of aviation. And it usually takes concerted effort to do so. And events like this are one of the things that gives people the ideas and inspiration to go forward. So if you're out there flying in this airport or in that area or in another airport or another situation elsewhere in the world, something happens, take it as inspiration, do something good with it.
All right. And with that, I will give the last word. And as I always do, if you're going to go flying here or in the rest of the world, pre-plan your flight before you leave your house. Redo it again when you get to the airport. Make sure you check the weather here, there, and everywhere in between. And get out to your airplane. Do a pre-flight, a very thorough pre-flight. Touch your airplane. And I get people that saying, what do you want to touch your airplane for? If you fly the same type of airplane, a 172, for example, and you go out and wiggle the airplane and wiggle the flight controls, it won't take long before you know what's normal and you'll be able to recognize what's not normal. And that can make a big difference. And we had on a previous show, Todd, you talked about what you saw on one pre-flight with one of your airplanes. So, I mean, that's so important. And after you get in the air with your airplane, don't forget to taxi and pay attention. All right? But after you get in the air, put that head on a swivel. It's a good example of an airline that looks like, at least at this point in time, looks like they were not paying attention to what was going on outside of their cockpit. And that may change, but it looks like, from based on what this preliminary information has, it looks like the pilot flying wasn't paying attention to what was going on around them. And that's a recipe for disaster. We've had mid-air collisions, some of them fatal here in the United States with training accidents. We've had military pilots flying low run over little airplanes, right? And where was their head in the swivel? So please pay attention, situational awareness. We know it's a problem. We know it kills people. Please don't fall into that trap. And please, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that. And we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.